It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
97.1 FM Talk. On-demand audio.
Welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker filling in for Mark Reardon. You can find me online at Ryan Recker, on Facebook at Ryan Recker, on Twitter, places like that. Ryan Recker Radio, another spot too. Joining us now is a business professor, director of labor studies at Wayne State University. That's in Detroit. Merrick Masters, thanks for joining us in St. Louis. Oh, Merrick, are you there? Ooh, you know, being remote, I got to admit, Tyler, I can't hear the phone line. So I don't know if you have to punch something up on the board so I can hear him, or if he's not there, let me know. Oh, there we go. Merrick, hello.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Oh, I hear you now. Yeah. So it's when I do the remote shows, it's so funny because we're both in the same city right now, logging into and talking to St. Louis. But it's great because you have a St. Louis connection. You actually grew up in St. Louis, didn't you?
I lived there for a year in around 1961. I went to first grade there. My dad taught at Washington U that year. And then when I was older, when I was almost 15, I moved to Edwardsville, Illinois. And that's right across the river from you folks. And my wife was born in St. Louis and moved over to Columbia, Illinois. And I met her at SIU Edwardsville. And though St. Louis is kind of our own stopping grounds.
The rest is history, they say. Okay, one of the big things that came out, a lot of people have been talking about the Teamsters, and part of it is they did this internal poll. They found that Donald Trump was actually preferred among their members, which is kind of surprising to some. We saw the Teamsters speak at the Republican convention, also the Democratic convention. And part of it is, okay, well, you have Donald Trump, who hasn't been necessarily complimentary to unions, but union members and the Teamsters still support him. So can you talk a little bit about the Teamsters in general and what you think might be going on there?
Well, I think the International Executive Board of the Teamsters, which makes the decision at the presidential level about endorsements for the international union itself, is conflicted. On the one hand, it wants to pay careful attention to its membership, and the polling results that they have indicate that a substantial percentage of their rank and file, over a majority, support Donald Trump. But Trump's positions on the issues are not as favorable as the Harris-Biden administrations have been, particularly on matters pertaining to labor law reform. And while the Biden administration did invoke the procedures to have Congress overturn and impose a contract in the case of the railroad workers that the Teamsters represented, that was something that was not in favor of the Biden administration. But I think they had to make a difficult choice. But I would note at local level, at least in Michigan, the Michigan Joint Council 43, which is pretty statewide of its representation of the Teamsters, did endorse Kamala Harris today. And there's also a joint council in the California and Nevada area, which has endorsed Harris. So locals of the union or regional affiliates of the union will be free to make their own endorsements.
And maybe part of this is that a lot of times you find union members don't necessarily like the idea that their union is spending a lot of their dues donating to certain candidates. So do you think the Teamsters may take a poll like this, at least on the national level, and realize, well, maybe our people don't like us giving a lot of money to one party or the other. Does this maybe mean the Teamsters could be out of politics? Say, hey, we're just going to let this one go, and we're just going to be done sending dues money to any candidate because it just upsets our members.
Well, I think that there are a certain percentage of members across all unions that really do not appreciate the use of their dues for political purposes. Although in some cases, members do have the ability to check off and have their due part of their dues devoted to political purposes. But a larger number of union members are going to oppose the specific endorsements of the union as opposed to the union per se being involved in politics. And I think that's what you're seeing here, that this is a preference poll, and there are a lot of union members in unions such as the Teamsters and the auto workers and the steel workers on down the line that are more conservative than their leadership and support Donald Trump because of the policies and his strength as a leader, I think, which has a lot of appeal to them. A lot of union members who feel that you need a strong leader who's going to take strong stands on tariff issues and on crime and on the border.
Yeah, and something that happened, and this being a labor issue, and joining us here, Merrick Masters, professor, director of labor studies at Wayne State University. That's in Detroit, big union town. St. Louis is a big union town, a lot of union representation in both of these cities. But kind of interesting side note, yesterday the Federal Reserve came out, they dropped the interest rate by half a point. Some people thought it would be a quarter. A lot of people anticipated it could be upwards of a half. So that's kind of a big deal, and people are still talking about it. But one of the things that people are mentioning is that the Fed chair, Jerome Powell, mentioned that one of the reasons we're seeing an increase in the number of people looking for jobs is because of all the new immigrants that are coming into the country. Now, we do have a pretty big influx of people that would be looking for ways to sustain themselves living in this country, so they look for work. So what kind of impact do you think we're seeing right now and will see when it comes to new immigrants coming into this country when it comes to the labor forces?
Well, I think you're going to see a lot of displacement and a lot, particularly at the lower end of the economic scale. And this is going to hard hit people in working class areas and in inner city areas more than in other areas. And I've seen some evidence which indicates that the employment growth that's occurred in recent years has been primarily among foreign-born residents, not among native-born American residents. And so as a result of that, I think eventually you're going to see some outcry and people are going to be concerned about the impact this is having on jobs. And also they're going to be concerned about the obvious impact that it's having on the budgets of municipalities, state governments, and the federal government as they have to finance the transportation, the housing, and the other services provided to the people who cross the border without proper documentation.
Yeah, we've heard some people make those arguments, some very concerning things. If you keep in, you know, it's the hard part that we run into is just trying to pinpoint the exact number of people undocumented that came into the country. And there's even estimates saying from the start of the Biden administration, we're upwards of 10 million people up until, you know, projected towards the end of his 4 years. And when you talk about maybe an influx of that many people, yeah, that's going to have an issue with housing because they're going to need a place to live. So that's going to put a hurt when there's already a limited amount of housing in any given city where they may be moving to. And of course, jobs and other resources that have limited quantities, resources available too. And that's going to be big burdens for these local governments. So we're starting to see these things. And part of it is, I don't even know if we got a full grasp of what we're dealing with here. Do you think the Federal Reserve even can fully grasp the pure bulk of numbers? You think they're getting more and better numbers reported to them than the media is getting reported? Because they make it sound like They got this all figured out. That's part of the job of the Federal Reserve. They need to balance these things so, you know, the cost of goods and services don't go way crazy. And so do you think the Federal Reserve's got this under control, or do you think perhaps that
I don't think anybody's got it under control. We've seen reports of up to 10 million, but I think that's probably an understatement. And you have to remember there were a lot of people here already that have been here crossing the border without proper documentation. And so as a result, we have a country that has been harboring a number of people who, technically speaking, are probably not eligible to work for companies in the U.S., but are still getting jobs because there are all kinds of ways around it. And you have a labor shortage in some respects for certain types of occupations that they fill the bill for. So in the societal impact is going to be enormous in terms of the cost of education, the cost of social services, the cost of additional police security that you're going to need. All these kinds of things have really been factored into the equation. And in a nation that has such high indebtedness, with the public debt now well into the $30 trillion, it's hard to fathom that you're going to be able to continue to find the resources to fund these kinds, this kind of influx of population.
Yeah, we're having a hard time even making the payments on the interest alone. It's a big difference.
Well, the interest alone is over $1 trillion now. And I'm old enough to remember that. I remember when Lyndon Johnson talking about his budget, you know, in the mid-1960s, you know, he had to keep it under $100 billion. And now we have budgets that run in the trillions of dollars. And most of it is transfer payments of one sort or another. A large chunk goes to defense. And it's hard to say, you know, what we actually get for all those defense appropriations, because there's so much graft in the procurement part of defense that I'm not certain it's a very cost-effective operation.
No, we got some problems with this debt. And does it scare you when you hear these proposals by, you know, Kamala Harris and Walz basically saying, hey, if you put me in, we're going to give first time home buyers $25,000, and we're going to throw $20,000 here, and we're going to up the child credit. And they're talking about all of these things that are going to stimulate the economy more, and by giving more and more money out to the people. But we know what happened last time all this money was given out. Does that scare you when you hear those proposals?
Well, particularly the fraud and abuse that you had in all the pandemic money that was given out. I mean, that is a massive ripoff that occurred for the taxpayer, and there's been no accountability for it. You hear of all kinds of shenanigans going on in the military procurement in Ukraine and elsewhere in the world. I think this is another example of that. And when people talk about, politicians talk about it, and I'm a Democrat, but you know, there's no such thing as anything free. Somebody pays for it. And you talk about free college for people, well, somebody's going to pay for it. You talk about free health services for somebody, somebody's going to end up paying for it, because somebody's got to provide the services and pay for the people that are going to provide those services on the ground to people in hospitals and other medical centers. And, you know, the notion that nobody is going to end up having to foot the bill is just ridiculous.
I think a lot of people, and going back to the Teamsters and these unions, but in general, when you poll the workers, they realize that their ability to take the salary they have from their job and make a living out of it is getting tighter and tighter and tighter, and it has been over the last couple of years. And I think they realize that the offset of someone that may not be complementary to unions is going to be worth it if the economy starts improving the way it used to be before Joe Biden got into office. You think, economically speaking, that's what's motivating some of these Teamster people? That's why they're voting in a way that would, you know, traditional thought would be they're voting against their best interest.
I think that from their perspective now, they look at the fact that real wages rose higher in the Trump administration. Real wages have decreased in the Biden administration. They look at all the giveaways, the programs, the relief of student debt, people not having to pay that. And every time the Democrats seem to get up on a stage, they promise something to somebody free. And that's just not, you know, what working people face. They're being taxed. They have to pay. And I think what we're seeing now is a fundamental realignment of the political parties, where today the Republican Party under Trump has become the party of the working class, and the Democratic Party has become the party of the elite, the donor elites and the educated elites. And it reflects the interests of people in that category. And therefore, I think that it's not unsurprising that you see a lot of people who are working class looking more and more heavily towards the Republicans as a viable alternative.
Yep. Merrick Masters, business professor, director of labor studies at Wayne State University. So funny that we're both probably not that far away from each other right now as we broadcast to St. Louis, Missouri. Always great that we have a local tie-in, given that you've lived in the area when you were younger. Merrick, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and have a good afternoon.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.